Hey everyone, this is John Jacob Schmidt. I just had to put down the family dog. So the suck factor is pretty high here at the Readout Ranch. So I do not feel like doing a show and I don't feel like talking about it. But what I am going to do is play a 1 hour segment from Cascadia Rising, the live coverage that we did. A lot of people really appreciated that. They enjoyed it. And that was 8 hours a day for the entire week-long exercise that we covered, that live coverage. So I'm going to share that with you, and I hope you enjoy it. And so I'm going to air Fox 519's Eye on the Economy and then turn you over to day three, the first hour of live coverage of Cascadia Rising here at Radio Free Readout. Have a blessed week.
While America leads the way with winning gold medals, we are falling far behind in our economy, and serious concerns about another fiscal stimulus are beginning to emerge. Hello, everyone. Fox 519 here. While the masses are being distracted by the bread and circuses, I am bringing you the financial news and commentary that matters to your pocketbook as patriots and preppers. This is Eye on the Economy, brought to you by Radio Free Readout. Hi, folks. Fox 519 here. You know, each day you get up, you get dressed, you zombie walk out to your kitchen for that first cup of coffee for the day. What do you want it to taste like? Do you want it to taste like tar, bitter, nasty, thick? Nope. I can tell you I like mine to taste like warm, buttery goodness. Yes, that is what good coffee should taste like. Folks, if you want coffee that tastes like this each morning, you really need SistersCoffeeRoasters.com. Sisters Coffee Roasters Coffee is an amazing high-quality product, and you know, it's going to get you up and get you going in the morning. It's also a great way to make sure your food storage has that pick-me-up that you need. So, go to SistersCoffeeRoasters.com today, get your green or roasted beans, and remember what my close friend Whiskey62 says. Sisters Coffee Roasters Coffee, it's what all the cool patriots are drinking. That's SistersCoffeeRoasters.com. Hello, and welcome back to Eye on the Economy. Now, to quote General Maximus from the movie Gladiator, are you not entertained? Well, if you're watching the Olympics, you might be, but you might have missed a big story this week. Hillary Clinton said point blank to an audience at a campaign rally she plans on raising taxes on the middle class to make things, quote, fair. In a speech this week in Omaha to a very large crowd that included billionaire Warren Buffett, she exclaimed the following, quote, because Warren likes to stand up for a fairer tax code, Trump wants to cut taxes for the super rich. Well, we're not going there, my friends, and I'm telling you right now, we're going to write fairer rules for the middle class, and we're going to raise taxes on the middle class. End quote. Now, right away after this was published, the left-leaning media outlet The Daily Wire claimed that the quote was a Freudian slip of the tongue. But she also followed up her speech that she wants to increase taxes on the wealthy so they can pay for their, quote, fair share again. Well, as I watched this speech and looked on Warren, the look on Warren Buffett's face said, what the heck? Now, Clinton's Marxist demagoguery is going to cause huge problems, and she is right, and yeah, I did say that. We do have a ton of ground to make up, but increasing taxes on the shrinking middle class is not how we do that. Is she not watching Venezuela at all? Does she have a poor economic advisor? Does she not see the horrific consequences of what far-apart classes do for our country? The problem herein lies that Clinton may have tough talk on increasing taxes on the upper and middle class, but she wants to increase family leave and offer free tuition to college students. And if she were elected and able to implement these programs, the national debt would increase to an estimated $25.825 trillion by 2026. Yes, it is a ways off, but the effects of this type of debt would be so incredibly damaging that the effects would certainly cause massive economic failure long before 2026. Clinton's policies are so terrible, I just don't understand how anybody of normal sanity could see how increasing a national debt would have any positive effect on the economy. Well, as we get closer to the election, I will be breaking down both the Trump and Clinton plan. Woo, that's a Freudian slip on my part. I mixed up the two of them together. Guess they're really not that different after all. So again, folks, I'll be comparing those in the weeks to come, and I hope to bring you some more economic news around their policies. And with our next story, you're going to understand how Clinton increasing the debt will have problems. All right, another U.S. news tonight. We all know that the Treasury debt outstanding has already seen massive increases since 2007, and not just around in the U.S., but around the world. This week, Bloomberg market strategist Chris Maloney wrote a very interesting article detailing how the monetary stimulus is making a huge comeback. In his article, Maloney writes, quote, "For an 8-plus years now, the U.S. federal government's fiscal policy has been one of unprecedented deficit spending, pushing the total debt from $15.3 trillion to up an additional $6.1 trillion, a 153% increase," end quote. Now, meanwhile, as the debt continued its relentless rise higher, it's pushing the U.S. ratio of government debt to GDP to an all-time post-World War II high of 105%. Folks, if you just can't see what's going on in the economy right now, it's just staggering to see how we have two candidates running for president. Neither one really truly understand what it's going to take to get the ship righted. I mean, everybody knows this thing is going to come apart at the seams sooner rather than later, so they're going to try to spend their way out of it. We even have mainstream analysts showing up now saying, hey, something's not right here. And I would hope that you take this second very short story, but take it to heart nonetheless that 105% GDP to actual growth is not a good number to know. So I want you guys to really think through what you're voting for in this upcoming season. I want you guys to take time to really study both candidates' tax plans. Usually I try to ask you to go out and make sure you're, you know, buying more beans, bowls, Band-Aids. But this week I want you to spend some time really breaking down candidates and understand where they're coming from. So again, we thank you all for listening. Thank you for continued support of Eye in the Economy. And for Fox 519, I'm signing off. Have a great night. God bless you all.
Okay, now it's very important that you keep in mind that this was only a training exercise. These sound like very realistic, convincing news reports from a simulated disaster, but it's important that you know that this is only an exercise. This was from Cascadia Rising, and it is only a training exercise.
Governor Brown declared a state of emergency at 8:17 a.m. Tuesday, June 7th. Oregon Office of Emergency Management activated the Emergency Center in Salem to gather information about the scope of the impact and local and regional response efforts. President Obama issued a major disaster declaration for Oregon on Tuesday. The declaration made federal individual assistance available to eligible survivors in 19 Oregon counties. Federal public assistance is also approved for the same 19 counties, while hazard mitigation is approved for all counties in the state. Federal emergency declarations have been approved for 21 states to support Oregon in search and rescue, emergency evacuations, mass care and shelter operations, and other necessary emergency protective measures as requested by the state and coordinated through FEMA. They were able to release that while the Oregon Department of Transportation is still gathering assessments, it is estimated that hundreds of bridges were damaged or even collapsed. Landslides and soil liquefaction have left many roadways unusable. Oregon Office of Emergency Management Director Andrew Phelps is quoted as saying the state's first priority is life, safety, and response operations, and that the safety of Oregon is of the utmost importance to the Office of the Governor. We asked for an interview, but we were referred to overwhelmed local agencies who are still evaluating the damage to find more specific areas and details on the human impact of this large natural disaster. They urge Oregonians to be aware that aftershocks may happen for 24 to 48 hours after the earthquake. If you are safe, stay where you are. Shelter sites will be posted as they open. Avoid travel if possible to keep roads open for responders. Look for first aid tents in your near neighborhoods. Reserve hospitals for life-threatening injuries. Check on neighbors and assist others in your area until additional help is available. Provide first aid assistance. Do not touch downed power lines. Conserve water. Drink bottled water if it is available. If you're uncertain about the quality of your drinking water, do not use. If you're able, boil for 1 minute before use. Look for important life-saving and life-sustaining guidance directly from local, state, and/or tribal officials and, when possible, over radio, cell phone, television, and the internet.
And this next update here is coverage of the Portland National Guard and the fire departments and their efforts right here at Radio for Readout, brought to you from World Net News, or correction, this is ENN from Simulation Deck.
We're here on scene, a part of Unified Command. We're assisting Portland Fire at one of the main disaster sites here at the Cascadia earthquake. They down here at 4th and Main, we have a concentrated collapsed structures and zones that's requiring additional services from the military. Unsure of the number of casualties, obviously with this kind of disaster, 9.0 earthquake, they're extremely high. Right now what we're focused on is the survivors. So all these efforts here, the military and Portland Fire linking up to save the survivors. So yeah, we have a lot of people that are, you know, struggling right now and out of services. So the best thing to do is seek out your Red Cross and service agencies such as that. You see them roaming, and they can usually point in the direction of food and water. There's also designated parks if you're injured and need assistance, and you can make your way to Laurelhurst Park downtown between 7th and 14th Street. There's a site right there that are handling small injuries. So right now, we've linked up, we've taken the resources and the personnel of the military, linking up with the Portland Fire, the people that are, you know, do this full time, and we're augmenting them and assisting them wherever they need to be.
Excellent. And what still needs to be done?
Currently, there's still people trapped in rubble piles and under debris. We got people that are evacuated to the top of buildings that they can't pass through down lower. So we're focusing on the immediate people that we can get out, and then we're transitioning into a technical phase. So some of the people that are trapped and need, you know, below cliffs and in extreme places, that's usually where the military is stepping in with the ropes and the different capabilities there. United States military and the civilian rescue are working in conjunction, working together, and we're out here to save lives.
That is the latest from ENN, and there were several press releases that happened last night with the police chief in Portland, Oregon. There were several Portland, Oregon press releases. The Portland Department of Transportation and the Department of, the Water Bureau head was giving the briefing on the situation there. And people are asking, where are FEMA and where is the military? We have more from WNN at Simulation Deck to talk about that.
Looking at this type of event, this is not our normal flood type event, but really this is an all-out attack on trying to get the resources in there.
As the logistical impact of the quake comes to light, the state's Coast Guard, FEMA, and military work together to try to get life-saving search and rescue, medical assistance, food, and water into the Pacific Northwest. While local response teams have been on the ground now for 2 days, response teams from outside the region are slow to make their way to the disaster zone. Part of the problem is infrastructure damage and getting the necessary equipment, people, and resources into the area. Our team coverage starts with WNN's Angie DeWild with more from FEMA. Angie?
Gil, repeated questions today. What is FEMA doing and what is taking the military so long to get to the scene? As you said, the roads, bridges, airports, and seaports are all severely damaged, if not inoperable or impassable. Basically, everything west of I-5 is very hard, if not impossible, to access.
We are working with our partners, both military and business partners, to see how we can get through. On the ground, not necessarily on the roads, but on the ground, as well as the use of airlift.
Once they get through, the states, FEMA, and military are coming up with unique ways to maximize the supply lines, not only for medical and search and rescue needs, but for food and water.
Everything that we are doing right now is, in fact, life safety. Getting in commodities that are needed, looking at resources, not necessarily to bring in bottled water, but to bring in ways to make water so that folks can have water to hydrate with. looking at the resources of food that might still be within the area that we can get while we're bringing in our commodities.
A total number of survivors, whether isolated, trapped, injured, stuck in their homes or shelters, is unknown at this hour, as is the total count of human lives lost. My colleague, WNN's Joel Hilton, joins us from hard-hit Aberdeen with more from the community there. Joel?
Angie, unfortunately, we've had numerous reports of people killed across the region. Not only is the emotional impact intense, but people are starting to question how to handle their deceased relatives or friends, a situation playing out across the disaster zone. As the time goes on, the situation will only get harder. And Gil, another issue here in Washington, more than 1 million people were told to shelter in place. But from what we can see, those people are not adhering to the request.
Joel, what can you tell us about that?
Gil, we are here along the highway that leads from Aberdeen back towards Olympia. Here on the higher ground along Highway 12 between Aberdeen and Montesano, we've seen hundreds of people camping in open areas, tents, RVs, or improvised shelters. These folks tell us they are from Aberdeen or Ocean Shores, two communities destroyed by the tsunami. Their homes are gone. Many are trying to make their way to Shelton or Olympia. There are rumors of a large presence of National Guard soldiers at the fairgrounds in Shelton. But these folks have been stopped as the highway is blocked just west of here due to earthquake damage to the roadway. It is impassable. Gil, many of these people, including whole families, grabbed what they could and started driving, biking, and walking. This may be the beginning of a mass sheltering crisis for Washington.
Thanks, Joel. Another concern today, growing difficulty finding food and clean water. WNN's Steve Kearns joins us from Coos Bay, Oregon with more. Steve?
Well, Gil, as we heard from FEMA, getting into the region is difficult, which means as food in the region spoils and access to drinking water dries up, people are not only going to look for sustenance, but could start getting sick as well. Without clean water and clean living conditions, disease could develop and spread through the growing tent communities that we've seen start popping up along major interstates here in Oregon and, as referenced earlier, in Washington as well. Now, Gil, if food and water doesn't get into these areas quickly, we could end up having a large humanitarian crisis on our hands.
Thanks, Steve. WNN is following all of this story. Stay with us for updates. For the World News Network, I'm Gil Williams.
That brings you up to date on, well, almost. We still have more information, but this crisis, the water, it is water that is the number one issue right now for the health and well-being, safety, and the lives of those in the affected areas. And I'm wondering if we can drop millions of propaganda pamphlets on a town in Iraq, why can't we fly over and drop Life Straw water filters over these communities? Many of them are congregated in tents and other shelter type of. They are concentrated in different areas in some cases. I don't know why we couldn't just drop them in with helicopters. Just throw them out. Put little parachutes on them. Or just drop them out like they are in the middle of a football field and let people pick them up. They're, what, $20, $30 each? It costs as much as it takes to for the governor to fly over and gawk at all the damage. Probably cost a good $100,000. And now let me adjust that. Something's blasting at me. Oh, that was my other scanner. Okay, I thought I had everything turned down to, you know, a certain manageable level, but that one came blasting in. I had that small scanner. And that's what I'm listening to right now in my local area. The Aries and Racies organizations are activating, and I have a scanner radio that I got. I actually have a couple of them that I got for $10, and the other one I got for $20 at yard sales. and they don't decode that new P25 that a lot of law enforcement and EMS are using, but they're great for the local ham radio, and a lot of agencies also simulcast. So they will put out their digital modes, and then they will simulcast on the analog, so you can catch it on the UHF, VHF frequencies, not encoded. And so if you come across a little scanner at a yard sale for $10, $15, snatch it up. They're handy. I've got one out in my shop that I just keep on all the time, and one in my ham shack. So they're just handy. Thought I'd pass that along. That made me think of it. And the volume works really well. I have information here that I want to pass along. This morning, we did see activity on 7080 upper sideband PSK31, and that was appeared to be Idaho Aries traffic. That's the Amateur Radio Emergency Service. And that is a organization under the ARRL falls under the ARRL, which is the Amateur Radio Relay League. It's kind of like the NRA of ham radio. They are advocates for the amateur radio community, and they work in Washington, D.C. with legislation. They work with FCC with regulation and the use of the bands. They advocate for amateur radio to expand more access to the bands. They do a really good job. Well, there's an organization underneath the ARRL called ARES, Amateur Radio Emergency Service. These are ham radio operators who volunteer to help their communities in a time of need. And they work with hospitals to maintain communications. They work with aid and relief agencies. They might work with the Red Cross and others in the community to help organize the efforts, and will provide communication support for organizing response efforts in a disaster. Now, most of them also either are also members of RACES, or they work very closely with RACES, but pretty much anymore, ARES and RACES are synonymous. They are pretty much joined at the hip, and a individual that is a member of ARES will most likely also be a member of RACES. Now, RACES is the Radio Amateur Communications Emergency Service, and they work specifically with the government. That is a government program to use civilian ham radio operators to assist with continuation, continuity of operations for governments. You'll typically find them at the county level EOC, Emergency Operations Center, and those are normally located at your county sheriff's department unless you have a separate EOC, Emergency Operations Center. But those are there to aid with government operations in a disaster or a communications grid down type of situation when conventional communications fail. The county EOCs fall under the state level EOC, and that will oftentimes be your Bureau of Homeland Security or your, that's what they typically fall under. They might name it something different from one state to the next. And then at the federal level, you have FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, which oversees those. So RACES is very much, it is a government program for continuity of government. And the RACES and ARES guys usually work very close together and usually are the same people. So we're monitoring that traffic right now as they organize and work with the Red Cross and other non-government organizations as well as government agencies to try to respond to this simulated major disaster, this 9.0 earthquake, which took place Tuesday morning at 8 a.m. So, what we have so far is SITREP 01. I've brought you up to speed on what has happened over the evening hours, and now we're kicking off day three of this four-day exercise. There was a notice that was put out by Clearwater County in Idaho. Their emergency management is stating that they've completed a disaster declaration just verbally. They are responding to the evacuees into the Clearwater County area. The Clearwater County EOC has apparently opening just this morning and setting up to respond to that. Also in Kootenai County, the sheriff's office also advised there was a run on grocery stores and reporting of long lines at some gas stations as local residents anticipate an influx of evacuees. The Bonner County emergency manager reports that he's received information that as many as 3,000 evacuees will be coming to the county, including 25 to 30 of those with medical needs. All of those will need shelter, and they're still experiencing power outages and fuel shortages there in Bonner County. There has been no request for assistance by them at this time. There are also Red Cross shelters set up at the Kootenai County Fairgrounds, and we have some Amron operators that are going to confirm that and try to get some pictures so that we can bring you up-to-date news on those developments. There was a number, I think it was 150. I will try to confirm that. They were preparing to house 150 people at the Kootenai County Fairgrounds in Kootenai County, Idaho, at that Red Cross shelter. And I'm sure that's going to expand to increase capacity. They're expecting 140,000 disaster refugees to begin making their way to Idaho. Idaho's bracing for that, and the governor has called for a state of emergency and said that they are ready to lend assistance to Oregon and Washington to respond to that. Additionally, survivors of Tuesday's earthquake and tsunami begin to realize they are on their own. This is from Simulation Deck, the news update. Let me pull this up. I believe this is from the Exercise Times Daily. One of the first things visitors noticed when they came to the Pacific Northwest was the laid-back, easygoing demeanor of the people who lived amongst the natural beauty of Oregon, Washington, and British Columbia. The islands, the ocean, the volcanoes, and lush forests were among the world's most breathtaking natural wonders where millions lived and visited. Unfortunately, there is a flip side to living amongst Mother Nature's most magnificent wonders. Underneath the beauty of the Pacific Northwest region, a giant has lurked for thousands of years. Every few hundred years, this giant has awakened and unleashed a fury that few in either of U.S. or Canada have ever prepared for. This is good writing, huh? I didn't write this. This was submitted. I'm not sure who wrote this. Good stuff. I'm on the edge of my seat. Tuesday, scientists' warnings came true. Now, where there once was laughter, there are tears. Where millions found peace and inspiration is a place of fear, anguish, devastation, and death. Life as people knew it here in Washington prior to Tuesday, June 7th, now will never be the same. Lori Love of Seattle said, I remember hearing news reports about scientists warning us to prepare for the, quote, big one, unquote. Lori's two children were visiting their grandparents in Oceanside, Washington, when the early morning 9.0 earthquake along the Cascadia subduction zone set off a deadly tsunami that swallowed much of the Pacific Northwest coastal region. I've seen the videos, Lori said. With very little notice, many densely populated coastal towns ceased to exist after a massive 30-foot wave struck the area within 15 minutes of the earthquake. Residents who did not or could not flee areas like Oceanside in time did not stand a chance, nor did thousands living along the region's inundation zone. Closed-circuit TV provides a glimpse of the horror everyone in those areas experienced. Vivid images of people, cars, motorhomes, trees, and livestock either being sucked out to sea or swept inland by a wild rush of fast-moving water and debris. Nearly 4 days later, survivors cut off from the world by massive fissures along major transportation arteries such as Highway 101 and I-5 to the east, and the decimated ports to the west are slowly realizing it may be weeks until help arrives. Wendy Wu of Seattle said, "We keep hearing that we needed emergency supplies to hold us over for 2 to 3 days. What a joke. It's obvious none of us will be getting help for at least a week or two. Several thousand are hurt, trapped, and in desperate need of help that will arrive too late. I try to keep the faith and to be hopeful, but each day more die. And each day brings challenges that seem insurmountable on top of all the death and destruction." Wu's 2-day supply of water and food is long gone, as are the hopes and dreams of the tens of thousands who lived here in the Pacific Northwest, next to the killer giant who has now drifted off to sleep once again. So, a very colorful article here from Exercise News Daily, painting a pretty vivid picture of what some survivors are dealing with. They've been saying it practically on a weekly basis from your local news coverage about the big one, and the scientists have been saying it is coming, it's just a matter of time. You should be prepared, and 2 to 3 days is not enough. You should have weeks worth of provisions stored up, including water and the means of procuring and making clean water. Lots of lessons learned here. Now let's get inside of the heads of some of these. One of our favorite things to cover are the bleats that are put out, not tweets. For Simulation Deck, they've created a simulated social media site, Blogger and Simulation Book instead of Facebook, and Bleater instead of Twitter, and they put out bleats. Some official, many are unofficial, just citizens. Now, here's the official bleats that are put out by your local agencies. The TCPH EOC Emergency Operations Center put this out. Residents are asked not to burn trash. Wait for information on where to take garbage. That's from the EOC Washington. Or this next one is. Our leadership team is working with leadership of at NCPA and others to determine those priorities. Yes, and getting assets out. FEMA Region 10 bleated a website for Governor Otter calling for more assistance under the title Idaho is an Option. We'll bring that to you here in just a moment. Matter of fact, let me go ahead and follow through and pull that up. If we can get it, that's from Agency News. And we'll let that load and see if we can come back to it. Another bleat from FEMA at Idaho BHS. Yes, people can call 1-800-588-9822. It's the National Emergency Family Registry and Locator System. So there is another option to the Red Cross's safeandwell.org. I will highlight this as well. Idaho BHS says people can call this 1-800 number. It is a National Emergency Family Registry and Locator System. So if you have loved ones in the affected area, you can register or search for them using this 1-800 number. That's good information. The other one from EOC Washington. This is something that people are having to deal with, and they are dealing with it. Temporary burial may be necessary. If so, ensure the site of burial and deceased identity is known. Dog tags. Be sure to mark burial areas clearly. Also, from the EOC out of Washington, human remains don't cause disease outbreaks. However, they will decompose more quickly in the heat and attract flies. Well, that goes against every bit of conventional wisdom we've ever heard about the disease that runs rampant in areas with lots of dead bodies. So I'm not sure what to make of that one. The NCPA, I'm not sure what that is. I'm going to highlight that and see if we can find out what the NCPA is. We've seen them a couple times, but they put out a bleat. The USS Carl Vinson headed to the Pacific Northwest. It's the ideal platform for relief efforts, robust airlift, and support equipment. So that is on the way as well. Another one from the NCPA. Something national, something public announcement, public. I'm not sure. USS Howard and USS Russell are heading up the coast of Washington near Seattle with search and rescue. Air Force Northern deployed 28 emergency preparedness liaison officers and joint air component coordination elements in support of Cascadia Rising. Navy North bleated, the Navy has deployed several ships and aircraft to assist in search and rescue operations. They will be arriving to the Pacific Northwest over the next several days. The USS Guadalupe will stop in San Francisco to receive supplies from FEMA before steaming ahead to the affected region. Also from NCPA. Navy P-3 Orion aircraft from installations across the U.S. are operating from the U.S. Coast Guard Air Station Sacramento to assist with Cascadia Rising. Lots of air assets coming into the area. Another one, Navy P-3 Orion from the installations across the U.S. are operating. I believe that was just a double. Let me just remove that. We don't need to be doubling up on information. U.S. Marine Corps is going door-to-door for search and rescue and to provide sheltering supplies. We put that out actually Tuesday. They were on it. They were in Joint Base Lewis-McChord, also known as JBLM. They were there doing some training when the earthquake hit, so they went right into action. Within just hours, they were on the streets checking on citizens and assessing and delivering what supplies they could. So we assume that they're continuing on with that mission. Let's take a look at what some of the citizens are bleating. And this is a good question. So into the third day, would this many in the disaster zone really have cell phones left? There is something that I purchased for my cell phone. Some little store, you can find them all over the place, and they are extended battery life little packs, little jump chargers, about the size of a thumb drive. They can give you many hours of additional battery use. I have one that gives me an extra 2.5 hours. You just plug it into the micro USB port or the mini USB port, and it gives you another 2.5 hours. So if you turn your phone off and just turn it on periodically just to check for updates and then turn it back off, you can make your phone battery last for days. And there are still cars in the area, and there's car chargers. You can still plug into a car charger and charge it into the cigarette lighter and keep your phone charged pretty much indefinitely with all those cars sitting there. Can't go anywhere with gas in them or with no gas in them. They still have batteries, and that's a lot of stored power. You just start your car up for 20 minutes, charge that battery back up, and then turn it off. So there's another couple of options for you. Somebody on foot, that's a different story. which is why I have a little miniature fold-up solar panel in my go bag. This is from Regan Miller. I keep hearing that we are supposed to work together with search and rescue groups, but it seems like the victims of the disaster are the only ones working. We are checking on each other, stockpiling food and water, and sharing whatever we have. What are they doing? From Jordan Height, are there any roads in Oregon where airplanes can land with supplies along I-5? I'm in California and want to fly my Cessna with some things. Well, you should probably get a hold of, start with the Red Cross and see how you might be able to contribute. Lots of people are willing to help, but it needs to be done in an orderly fashion. And they're also assessing where the needs are the greatest. So, Roderick Bryant, why did it take so long to get the national level involved? This is the worst disaster in the country's history. Yes, it is. And they did respond within hours. They started responding. They started sending supplies and assessment teams and response teams Tuesday, that day, which is why you should be self-reliant for up to several weeks just for a situation like this. Gabriella, haven't heard from her in a little while. Never felt like a lower priority in my life. There are so many that need help. I haven't seen a rescuer all day. Kaylee Watson says, can't the states ask the federal government for help? Are they? Are you, EOC Washington? Calling them out. Yes, they did. Immediately, they asked for assistance, and it is on the way. Freeman Adams, absolutely overwhelmed with the tragedy around me, but I'm just one person. You'd think the government would be ready. Skater Boy says, where are the tips for people who don't speak English or who have English as a second language? I appreciate the effort, but we need more. Well, you are in America, and there's just another example of why it behooves you to learn proficient English, Skater Boy. Harmony Williams says, I hear Idaho has bathrooms and clean water. I need to head that way. Hope this night goes by quickly. Well, Idaho does have bathrooms and clean water and electricity and all that. However, there are many disaster relief shelters that are being stood up all over the place where you'll have many of those things and safety, and you won't have to try to make a 600-mile journey to Twin Falls, Idaho from Seattle. Much safer for you. Stay tuned. Follow hashtag Red Cross and hashtag shelter. Do that. Marcus Hollister says, We just dug out our neighbor. He's in pretty bad shape. We have no water to give him. Hope he survives the night. If you have no water, then you didn't prepare, because there's water everywhere. They're just saying don't drink it because it could be contaminated. Well, if you have a portable water filter, or if you make your own water filter, as we've talked about, you can overcome that problem. It's so overcomable, especially when you have access to water, dirty water. You can clean it. If you have access to water, you have access to drinking water if you're resourceful. Ruth Johnson says, we are living like animals. How is this the United States? Well, United States is on Earth, and on Earth there are natural disasters, and you're not exempt because you are a bloody American. Tegan Walker says, if you aren't already dead, the toxins from the hazardous water will probably kill you. You're right, Tegan, unless you have a water filter or a way of procuring it. I'm just going to keep saying it. Eddie Brown, I had a neighbor in Oregon State Defense Force say they were disbanded last year. That was a brilliant move. And that's true, isn't it? The Oregon State Defense, much like the Washington Guard, it's kind of like, you know, like a militia. It's in between a militia and the National Guard, but it's official. It's part of the state civil defense program. Oregon disbanded theirs last year. I don't know if they will be bringing that back. I haven't heard. Rex Edwards says, no one is coming. It's really hitting me now. No one is coming to help us. Ah, the despair sets in. Well, Rex, do not despair. Be resourceful. Get through this. This is only temporary. Just ask the people from Hurricane Katrina. It will pass. You just got to make it through. So strengthen yourself, my man. Michaela Bell says, people are just going to keep dying. There's nothing anyone can do. Yes, you're right. People are going to continue to die. Many of them think they're going to die, and they're not. So this is a natural disaster, not unlike what has hit other places. Giselle Peterson says, waking up in New York to the devastation in Washington. How did anyone survive this? Ashton Cooper says, I haven't eaten since Tuesday morning, starting to realize I am probably going to die this week. There is no hope. Well, there is hope. Food, it is coming. And once again, a testament to why you should be self-reliant. So with that, let's take a short break. When we come back, I'll start compiling SITREP number 2 on this third day of Cascadia Rising, the training exercise simulating a 9.0 earthquake in the Pacific Northwest. Lots more to come. Got more news from World Net News to bring you, more bleats, and more coverage right here at Radio Free Redoubt. This is Radio Free Redoubt, bringing you live coverage. I've got a update from WorldNet News I want to bring to your attention. WorldNet News is covering this nonstop. Well, I wouldn't say nonstop. Every couple of hours, they have additional coverage. Let me turn this down. Stand by one. And we have traffic going on the ham radio, which is what you hear in the background there. But tent cities, as we talked about, are already popping up across the region, and Joint Task Force 10 speaks to the media. This is from NORTHCOM, which I also found out what NCPA, that's NORTHCOM, and I'm not sure what the PA is, but that's part of the Northern Command, NORTHCOM there. When you see those bleats or hear me relay those bleats to you, that's what that's about. But we have some coverage here about the tent cities that are going up across the region and JTF 10.
In any event like this, there's always very common needs. You're going to need a way to shelter people, tents, food, fuel, water, evacuation methods, medical, teams.
But meeting them is becoming another story. Thousands of people are starting to set up tent cities along remnants of interstates, church parking lots, and other open spaces because they don't know where to go or where to find help. Now, we're about 48 hours into one of the most catastrophic events to ever strike North America. We've experienced an unfathomable earthquake, aftershocks, and a massive tsunami so powerful that it pretty much wiped out the Pacific Northwest west of I-5. As the local, state, and federal response effort continues, we're starting to learn what the military is doing. WNN's Angie DeWild joins us with more from Bothell, Washington. Angie?
Gil, the military supports FEMA and is waiting for specific tasking.
While everyone is focused on their own individual state and counties and cities, we have to look at holistically the entire disaster and grab the person and say, hey, have you thought about this? Have you considered this asset? Did you know that there's something over here that you could use that's not being used? Because we're seeing the entire picture, whereas they're focused individually.
Words from the commander of the Joint Task Force X, or JTFX, which is the lead command, control, and coordination entity for active duty forces in support to the FEMA response to the disaster. JTFX is focused on search and rescue, opening airports, and clearing roadways. Gil, understandably, this is a huge catastrophe and will take time to sort things out. But questions over the seemingly growing time lag, which could be due to red tape. However, time is of the essence. As fuel supplies run low and people grow weary, as the realization of this disaster sets in.
Thanks, Angie. WNN is following this story. Stay with us for updates. For the World News Network, I'm Gil Williams.
And that is the latest that we have from them. We have nothing new from ENN. The press conferences that took place are giving people some guidance about security, safety, and survival. We do have this from the police chief of the city of Portland from his press conference that took place last night. And once again, these are lagging here. ENN, we've had problems with ENN, their videos streaming since yesterday. Nothing really has changed, and it's taken quite a while to load. You have a considerable amount of radio traffic going on right now. So anyway, let me try to get this loaded, and then we'll be back in just a few moments with coverage from the press release from the Portland Chief of Police in just a minute.
Take it off, take it in, take off all the thoughts of what we've been, take a look, hesitate, take a peek.
This is Radio Free Readout, bringing you live coverage of Cascadia Rising. We are on day three here of this simulated earthquake. 9.0 Tuesday morning simulated, took place about 75 miles west of Eugene, Oregon, creating devastation, followed by an equally devastating tsunami. So now federal agencies and state and county emergency operation centers are activated and responding to this. It has resulted in a refugee crisis where people are looking for help from anywhere. Many are losing hope, at least according to social media bleats that are being put out by the citizens. So we're watching this. Just also have this from a... Where was this posted? The Thursday, June 9th, 2016, students will commence a field day that will culminate in a live fire exercise at approximately 1 p.m. The location is on state land located a half mile west of Thompson Road, east of Miller Road. Where is this? What's taking place? Please avoid the area. Fires will be monitored. They're apparently doing some. It's a crash course in communications. Okay, I'm going to have to come back to this because this is, I thought this was something else, but that's okay. That's, what else do we have here? Someone's asking if there is a Facebook page for Cascadia Rising. Not to my knowledge, I have not seen anything like that. We do have some updates that I want to bring to you, some bleats that are official. And then we have man on the street citizen bleats. Very thought-provoking information people are putting out about their thoughts and their experiences, what they're seeing and going through, which are based off of the sentiments of people in real-world disasters in the past and the government trying to respond to it. This is very, very realistic. In fact, these are the very same frustrations and issues and questions that have been dealt with by government officials in the past. So they're training up to that, dealing with and building in a growing frustration among the citizens. So I have sit rep number two here will begin going over on this third day of Cascadia Rising. A little bit of local traffic. If you are in the area of Marion County, Oregon, on 145.290, hopefully you have your pen and paper handy, as you should. Someone's asking for the status of all three hospitals in Marion County. So far, nobody's responding. Why they would be on that frequency, I'm not sure. Maybe that's a local Aries Racy's frequency. But unfortunately, nobody's responding to him. So we'll continue to monitor that to see if someone comes online and responds with a status of the hospitals in Marion County. That frequency, once again, is 145.290. Lots of other traffic on the airwaves. We have the Washington Emergency Operations Center on 14.396.5. I say again, 14.396.5. 14.396.5 is the Washington Emergency Operations Center. They are on the air, apparently, operating as of about 3 minutes ago. So make a note of that. We will make a note of that. That's the first that we've heard of them using that frequency. But it could be a great place to go to get information that's going on right now. We'll talk about how you can listen here in 1 second, so that we can include you in this training and experience. Even if you're not a licensed ham operator, you do not have to be licensed to listen and monitor to traffic, government traffic, ham radio traffic, or otherwise. There's a few different ways that you can do that. First of all, if you have a ham radio, you can listen that way. If you do not have a ham radio, you can listen on a shortwave radio if it has single sideband. Now, the 14 megahertz, that 14.396.5, that would be on upper sideband. That's called the 20 meter band, and both voice and digital takes place on upper sideband in that 20 meter band. So if you go to that frequency, 14.396.5, and put it on upper sideband, you'll be able to hear whether it's digital or voice. The Washington EOC is using that frequency, and you can listen on your shortwave radio, or you can listen using SDR, or software defined radio. You can buy a dongle for HF, you need what's called an up converter. But for local traffic, you can use a $20 dongle and the free software to be able to decode that digital signal into something that you can hear, and of course, analog signals as well. The bottom line is you can listen to radio traffic using your laptop with an SDR dongle and listen to local traffic. There's something called an up converter or an SDR play. Write that down. SDR play stands for software defined radio. There's a free software called SDR console, software defined radio console. You download that software. It wouldn't hurt to give them a donation to help support their project, what they do, because they don't charge for that software program, and it is an excellent one. But if you purchase a SDR Play, which is a small box about the size of a cell phone, about twice as thick, that's $150, and that has a built-in up converter built into it, so you can listen to all bands, including HF. And with that free software, the SDR console, you can listen, decode, and listen to digital and voice communications going out over HF. And many of you are using those, and I'm new to that. I've had an SDR play for only a couple of weeks, so I'm experimenting with that and the software, and it's amazing. What an inexpensive, high-quality shortwave radio, all-band receiver, local communications, your local radio stations, all of it. right there on your laptop with lots of filters and things. It just makes it just a super high quality. It rivals any shortwave radio you could buy, but you do have to get a physical antenna up in the air to capture those signals. Now, the other option for you right now, if you have none of that, you do have a computer. Obviously, if you're listening to this, you're listening live streaming. So if you go to websdr.org, it's a website where hundreds of people around the world have antennas connected to SDR software, and they are streaming live their software-defined radio over the internet. These are remotely controlled by you. You find a station that is located in an area. They'll tell where it's located, the Netherlands or all the way to the United States, anywhere. Find one somewhere close to the Pacific Northwest, and you'll see a list of bands and frequencies that they stream. You can actually set the frequency and change the frequency from your computer remotely over the internet to change that station's software-defined radio to tune into the frequency you want to listen to. There is something that looks like a waterfall. It's called a waterfall. It looks like some graphic from the movie The Matrix. But those lines coming down, those are signals. That's radio frequency signals. You click on one of those, and you can tune in what's happening right there on that frequency. I posted a video that's it's embedded over at amron.com. I put a posting up there, and it's also on YouTube, on using software or SDR, software-defined radio to listen, and specifically web SDR. So if you have no equipment, no software, if you have the internet, you can still use this. It'll give you an idea of what it would look like if you had your own setup that you could control and use. So there you go. There's several options, ways that you can tune in to these radio frequencies that we talk about, and some of those frequencies that we have listed on the website for people to tune in and listen. Now let's get on to our sit rep number two, Jefferson County, out of Port Townsend. Of course, this is only an exercise. This is a training exercise, Cascadia Rising. A temporary relief shelter is being set up for the Port Townsend YMCA at the Port Townsend YMCA on Blaine Street for Port Townsend residents who lost their homes in the recent earthquake and subsequent tsunamis. The shelter will be open by tonight, by 6 p.m. For those citizens unable to get to the YMCA, you are urged to shelter in place and work with your neighbors to maintain your daily needs as best you can. Additional shelters are in the planning stages. Information will be forthcoming about locations of those shelters and when they will be open. If possible, please bring these items with you to the shelter: toiletries, including toothpaste, personal hygiene items and medications, blankets, sleeping bags and pillows, extra clothing, towels, washcloths, bringing a stuffed animal, toys, games, books for small children to make them more comfortable is a wise thing to do. For pets, you should have pets in a carrier or on a leash and a muzzle if appropriate. Food, photo of your pet owner with their pet, immunization record, and any other vet record for medications, microchip number if available, and a favorite toy or blanket for the animal. For ongoing information about where you can get help, listen to local radio station KPTZ 91.9 FM. There's a commercial radio station on the air. More and more of those are going off the air because they're running out of fuel for their backup generators. But apparently, KPTZ 91.9 FM at Port Townsend, their radio station's operational, so that'd be a good source for you to be able to stay tuned in if you're not already. The other thing are the Black Echo, Amron Black Echo FM broadcasting stations, which are reportedly being used throughout the affected area to keep people informed. Those Black Echo station operators are tuned in to the ham radio bands and getting information that way, some of them with satellite internet and backup power are able to get live streaming coverage as well, and radio free readout and re-streaming and rebroadcasting that out to the local communities. Now we're going to take a short break here, and when we come back, I'm going to continue with SITREP number 2 from day 3 of Cascadia Rising, and we're going to get into those bleats, what people are saying, what are the officials saying through their social media, and what are the people on the street saying? That and more here at Radio Free Redoubt. This is Radio Free Redoubt. I am John Jacob Schmidt, bringing you continuous coverage of the four-day training exercise Cascadia Rising, based on a simulated 9.0 earthquake with follow-on tsunami. And the training is realistic. It is plausible. And there is a lot of information flowing, both from Simulation Deck, as well as the ham radio bands with government communications taking place, local communications taking place as the various counties through the states of Idaho, Washington, and Oregon stand up their emergency operation centers. And we are monitoring this traffic right now through various different means. I have an update for you, ham operators. If you have EchoLink operational, the healthcare communications in the Tri-County region in Oregon, if you go to Kilo Bravo 7 Lima November Romeo dash Romeo, I'll get that for you again. That's KB7LNR-R. That is the station that you want to input in EchoLink to be able to monitor that. All right, have to make some minor adjustments here to the communications that I'm monitoring here in the background. So pardon me for that. One more time, you got your pen and paper handy. That EchoLink node is Kilo Bravo 7 Lima November Romeo dash Romeo. That's KB7LNR-R. And you'll be able to monitor that on EchoLink. Have aircraft traffic right now going on in the background that is helping to keep people, well, they're helping, you know, lots of joint operations going on right now with this coordination with all these different agencies to respond to this disaster. It's a great training exercise. Another one. Death toll continues to rise. This is out of Tacoma, yesterday's devastating 9.0 earthquake. This is last night at 18:30 hours. We already know the death toll is continuing to rise because we're getting that from social media. But according to a statement issued by U.S. NORTHCOM, that they have formed Task Force 10, Joint Task Force 10, to provide command, control, and coordination of defense support of civil authorities and operations conducted by the military in support of FEMA. The search and rescue mission is the first priority for many of the dozens of relief agencies in the region. Close to 1 million people are estimated to be homeless. 2.5 million are in immediate need of life-sustaining resources, including drinking water and food. A 7.1 aftershock struck Central Oregon coast this afternoon. This was yesterday. We are doing everything we can, but we just can't get to some areas, said one rescue worker. There are just too many people in dire need of food, water, and medical care. The Air Force Rescue Coordination Center in Tyndall Air Force Base out of Florida has been coordinating military search and rescue efforts in Washington and Oregon since the earthquake struck. As of June 8th, 2016, military search and rescue assets have airlifted 238 people to safety, assisted local authorities with 6 saves, and recovered 38 bodies of those killed, according to U.S. Northcom. So they've airlifted 238 people, and that leaves about 999,700, and there's a lot. Disaster relief agencies struggle to keep pace. In spite of the combined efforts for many of federal, state, and local agencies, the public outcry is that the assistance is too slow and too sparse. They're saying, help us, don't leave us to bury our own dead and sift through the debris of this on our own, bleated Ashton Brown. And we have more of those that we're going to be covering here in just a minute. That was from day 3. The first hour of coverage, live coverage from the training exercise Cascadia Rising. Hope you enjoyed that. Have a blessed week. This is John Jacob Schmidt. Good night.